Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 26th of March. We are going to have the travel itch like you wouldn't believe by the end of this hour. Holly Hughes is joining us. She is writer and editor of Frommer's 500 Places to Take Your Kids Before They Grow Up. Now, she hasn't been to all 500 of these places, but she says she's been to a surprising number, and it's all over the world. It's wonderful places in the United States, and it's museums and places to go snorkeling and beautiful vistas and all over, from Chicago, the Art Institute, to Mackinac Island, to places in England and Ireland and Asia and Africa. We're going to welcome phone calls for her because I have an inkling that some of you have places you would like to recommend, or you would like to ask Holly about some of these places that are on the list of 500. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Holly has two sons, and she used to go to relatives' homes, usually far away from where she lives, and did some of the theme parks in Florida, and then started expanding, and they've traveled to lots and lots of places. Holly, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I should add, I also, before I get in trouble, I also have a daughter.
Oh, you have a daughter, too.
Yeah, which it turns out to be an entirely different group of places you need to go to satisfy a girl. So.
Yeah, I would imagine, but everybody goes together.
Yes, yes.
So one year the boys get a choice and one year the girl gets a choice, or how do you do that?
We negotiate. I think it's less a question of different destinations is what you do when you're there. So, you know, if you visit New York, you know, the boys have to, you know, put up with going to American Girl Place.
Mm-hmm. Right, which is good. It's fun.
Yeah,
fun for them
so
to do that. I just had the best time going through the world last night. I was reading about the Supreme Court, and then I was reading about wonderful places to go to get away from all of the issues, and it was great fun. It's a terrific guide, I think.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It was a lot of fun to put together. It was, you know, I found that, you know, general travel books are, you know, writing for a wide audience, and they do kind of tend toward the adult traveler. And when I looked at the overlap, I used to also write the Guide to New York City.
Mm.
And when I looked at the overlap between the Frommer's Guide to New York City and my guide to, you know, where to take the kids in New York City, there was hardly any overlap whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
You just, you know, you visit different stores and you go to different, you're looking for a different type of restaurant, and you have different criteria for your hotel. And even when you're writing about a museum that anybody would go to, if you're writing about how to see it with kids, it's entirely different.
Exactly. Why is it that we tend to be in this mindset of this country of we go to Disney World if we want a vacation with our kids, and we don't venture a whole lot beyond that? That tends to be the ultimate attraction.
Yeah, I will say I have never been to Disney World once in my whole life. I have been to Disneyland, though, and I love that. So it's just sort of, and my kids have been there with other for other reasons. But and when my children were really pretty small, I remember people say, "Oh, you took them to Europe? How could you do that?" And there are techniques, and that was also something I wanted to share in this book. You know, how to keep a child happy and not restless during a long plane ride, and, you know, what to do to go move through a city, you know, to see a museum. You know, you make it into a treasure hunt, and you don't move from one picture to the other. You say, let's go see how many pictures we can find that have lions in them or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're interested, and then they want to do it. And so you have to make some compromises on your travel style in order to keep your kids happy, but two or three happy travel experiences makes them eager travelers.
You also include age recommendations for certain kinds of travel in the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, I mean, my kids are now 22, 20, and nearly 18, so I've been through all those phases of travel, and I know, you know, with a toddler you need certain things, and with a teenager you need some very different things. I actually just got back from a trip to London with my daughter, and it was probably the fifth time we'd gone there. And we were looking at entirely different things now than we would have when we went when she was five.
Mm-hmm. You mean she was looking at somebody she could have kind of a crush on?
Yes.
Because that's what I was doing when I was that age, traveling, right? A little
right.
bit of a romance. Do you look at, one of the things that I did with our young kids was, you know, I had this thing about you have to go to museums, you have to learn all these about the great works of art and the great thoughts, and it tended to be very, very educational. But you have found educational experiences in snorkeling, in looking in beautiful waters in the Caribbean.
Yeah. Well, I think we think of education related to travel as all history,
mm-hmm.
and I think we also need to think of it as science. Kids, you know, in school are learning an awful lot of science, and they're learning a lot of environmental science, and so you can play up to that. We did a drive cross-country where we really were sort of comparing the geography, you know, the geography of different landscapes, and, you know, how the, you know, this is how you keep children interested when you're driving across Kansas for hours. You know, you start to say, what are the different crops that we're seeing here? How big are the farms here? You know, this sort of social element of all this. And, you know, you make it interesting by playing into some of the things that they've been studying in school. And another thing that I describe this in the book, is that you don't expect them to land there and immediately be interested in learning. You have to do the learning ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
So before you go to a country, you teach them a little bit about what the food's going to be, what about, you know, some of the local history, some of the things that they should be looking for. I guess that's also trying to make it like a treasure hunt. You know, we are looking for this in this country. And so that they don't just land there and suddenly have to snap into some other mode. They're, you prime them for it, and that makes your trip so much more interesting. It's worth the extra work.
Yes, and good for you as well, for the adults. I'm interested.
You have to learn a lot as an adult that you didn't really know so that you look good when you're there.
Exactly, right. Let me show you this and let me tell you about it. I'm interested your children are the ages they are now, because it is old enough for me to ask the question, what difference has it made in their lives to have done this kind of traveling?
Well, I think that, for one thing, they are confident, good travelers. You know, they move through an airport easily and confidently, and I think that that is just a gift, so that they can now be independent travelers, which is, you know, sort of what we're trying to do, is we're trying to, you know, make people who can live in the world successfully.
Do you think that it has broadened their choice of profession?
Oh, well, I do think so. My oldest is now interested in becoming an architect, partly because, and actually in the historic preservation end of things, because so much, we sort of early on figured out that he was interested as you're walking around the city saying, oh, you're walking around Barcelona, well, why does it look this way? It looks this way because there was a big fire, and so everything was rebuilt very quickly in the 1890s, and that's why it has this very modern kind of architecture. You know, looking at the details on things. And that's sort of something he early responded to, and so we went with it, and now that's possibly what he wants to do for a living.
Oh, isn't that interesting? Now, you've taken on the whole world in this book, and the whole world is a pretty big place, so I have to ask the obvious question, how in the world did you decide, and there are more than 500 places in the book, but how do you narrow it down? How do you figure out what to include?
Well, we sort of, the way that the book is organized, which I thought was very helpful, was by categories, so that, you know, that, I cover places, for example, several different places in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
but that they're, you know, different museums that appeal to different people, so that you go there and you find there's 10 or 12 different things in Chicago that are going to be interesting to do. So that sort of helped, because you know your kids' interests. You know, my kids happen to be kind of history buffs. One of my sons really was interested in battlegrounds and things like that. But then, you know, another kid might be more interested in rugged, outdoorsy things. And so you need to Someone else might be really interested in science museums. Someone else, my kids weren't particularly interested in roller coasters and, you know, huge Ferris wheels, but I know some parents whose kids just love that. They need to have some sort of a thrill-seeking thing. And so although I could have written about 500 places that I personally had liked, I wanted to make it something that would be useful to all sorts of different kinds of travelers. So that's when I, you know, picked the brains of other parents, like on the sidelines at soccer games, and said, well, where have you gone? What do your kids really like?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I included some places I hadn't gone, because I knew that that would sort of fill in and make the book well-rounded enough for different parents to use for different types of kids.
I think that you start the book with these awesome vistas. Even if you're young, there are some places that you see in this world that you can bring up to your mind no matter how old you are, and they can be a source of comfort, and they can be absolutely knockout beautiful, and they are definitely worth seeing. Can you talk about some of those?
Well, you know, in fact, we did a trip a few years ago where we kept telling our kids, we have to go see Niagara Falls. Like, oh, we've seen pictures of Niagara Falls. We don't want to. That's all the way out there. That's no much fun. And then when we finally got there and they were standing on these cliffs, you know, hearing the water pounding, how loud it is, feeling the earth beneath their feet shaking because of the force of this water, they said, okay, all right, you know, actually seeing the picture isn't the same thing. And that in itself was a huge realization for these kids who have access now via, you know, photos. They think they've seen everything, and you haven't seen it till you've been there. And that is something that this generation really needs to learn and to be reminded about. We went to the Grand Canyon a few years ago, and it was the same sort of thing. You know, you've seen pictures, yawn.
Mm-hmm.
But to get there and to start walking down in it, and after walking for half an hour to look up, and you're still so close to the top.
Mm-hmm. And then we have to walk back up. Not an easy thing to do.
Yeah.
The Redwood Forests in California, there's something just very spiritual about that place.
It is really, it's like almost like a cathedral, I felt.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, you're just standing there and you feel how ancient these places are, which really surprised me. You know, you just feel like time matters nothing to these big trees. Yeah, that was an incredibly moving thing, and something really that we just sort of said, oh, we've got, you know, half an afternoon and we're in San Francisco, let's think of something to do. And we never imagined that that was going to be that beautiful and fascinating.
I'm glad you included, I don't know if you have been to this place or not, I've been in Northern Ireland, but not to the Giant's Causeway, but I've seen a lot of pictures of that place, and my son has been there. That's in the book as one of the great vistas.
Yeah, that was actually recommended by an old nanny that we had, who loved it, and that was some place that they used to always go on vacation, and yeah, I think that that is a fascinating place. I didn't get to go there while I was researching the book, but something that's certainly now on my list.
We're going to welcome phone calls for Holly Hughes, writer and editor of the guide Frommer's 500 Places to Take Your Kids Before They Grow Up, is our guest this hour. And here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we start our calls with Chris in Grafton. Hi, Chris.
Good morning. Thank you very much for the show. We have a little bit of history in our family. My kids are 21 and 17. I think they've been to about 10 countries with us. And our couple observations. One is they've learned to be very nonchalant when talking to friends and neighbors about where they're going because of so much stigma about, you're going where? Why would you go there when you could go to Florida for spring break? And we've never been let down by every trip we've taken. And one of the biggest dilemmas we have is, do we go back to a place we loved,
mm-hmm.
or do we go to someplace new? On the go, someplace new, the wife and daughter always go back to the place we love because it was so great, such as Rome.
Mm-hmm.
So I look forward to the book and very much enjoying the conversation.
So do you give me an idea of where you've been, Chris?
Well, my daughter's 21. Her first trip was at 6 weeks old to London, and around, and that was because there was all kinds of frequent flyer bonuses that got us free trips because of whatever was going on with that. But we've pretty much Western Europe. I have to push the envelope and get the wife to go across the Pacific or to South America. But we've done Spain, France, London, Ireland, Italy, Vienna, Austria, Italy. And they're actually right now, the wife and daughter are off in the Bahamas, and the son and I leave tonight, and that's someplace new we've never gone. And the other dilemma is, do we do a historical trip, a big city trip, or do we go to a beach somewhere? It seems about every third or fourth trip, the beach wins out, and especially this winter. I'm looking forward to that as well.
Yeah, I have a great time. The beach would win out for most of the country, I think, this year. The winter is long.
Oh, it's been a hard winter, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting point, Holly. How do you balance going? Because another thing that happens is if you go back to the same place, you have memories of your family being there and kids growing up together in the same resort that you always go to or the cabin that you go to. How do you balance that need with this desire to see the world?
That is a challenging one because my kids aren't as interested in, they want to go someplace new almost all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm trying, I'm stalling here trying to think about how to do that. We don't have, you know, a family place that we go to every year. And this probably would be great if we had one. You know, I feel that's a little bit of a lack, actually. But they really look forward to trying to, you know, they debate about, we're in the middle of a debate about where we're going this summer, in fact, and I don't know who's going to win on this one.
What are your choices? What are the suggestions?
Well, one of my sons is likely to be going over to Vienna to do an intensive German study.
Oh.
And so, you know, we've been thinking that it would be a great idea to go and, you know, take him there and then use that as an excuse for a little trip around Eastern Europe. And, we're just debating about it because there's so many other places that we want to go, and we haven't gone overseas for a few years. So It's, you know, the world is your oyster. It's sort of a lovely luxury, but we've got that this summer.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like Vienna's going to win out to me.
Well, I think so, but, you know, as I said, they're good travelers, and so now the fact that he's going to be going there doesn't necessarily mean that we have to take him there.
Right. That's true. Right. Chris, thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Mike in Richland County. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I've got a question about the trip that I'm going to be taking next month. My wife and I are going to be taking a 2.5-year-old daughter. First of all, how to keep her entertained on the plane for a 13-hour flight across the ocean.
Where are you going?
Second of all, if you can suggest anywhere on the North Island to not miss out on.
Mike, where are you going?
New Zealand.
New Zealand, oh. Okay. Holly, that's a long trip for a very young child.
And how old is your child?
2.5, he said.
2.5, yeah. Well, I think that you bring a bag of toys that aren't going to, you know, fall apart and have to be retrieved from the floor. That's one of the things. I used to carry such a big bag of things to entertain them during the flight. And find ways, of course, to get her to sleep during that flight, because that's, how many is that, 22 hours?
It's 13 hours from San Francisco to Auckland.
Yeah, okay, yeah, so that's a long flight. You know, make sure that she moves around the plane in between, too. I think, you know, my experience is that if a child isn't crying, usually the rest of the plane is very happy to see that they're moving around to keep them entertained. But and now, you know, it's so easy to bring their own movies onto planes so that they can, you know, watch the kind of things they want and not be bored when there's only one movie for the whole flight. We actually invested at that time in a little DVD player, individual DVD player, so that we could, you know, bring a bunch of the cartoons and things that they really like to watch. And, you know, the jet lag is a little bit of a problem, too, after that kind of a long flight. You know, they're in such a different time zone. So you have to sort of, you know, work with that and work gradually into the, you know, getting the kid on the local schedule. But New Zealand is such a great country, and there's just, you know, it's so many friendly people there that are really willing to help you with that. And I think some of the things that they could look forward to is the idea that instead of, you know, that they have their own version of, you know, like we have Native Americans here, and that the Maori people, so much that's interesting there is the relics of the Maori culture, and that would be a really interesting thing to get her interested in. And it's just gorgeous outdoor landscapes. I hope you'll be able to, you know, take some time and go out and see that, and maybe get her interested in just seeing how big sheep farming is down there, because everywhere you go, there's, you know, huge pastures full of beautiful sheep.
Have a wonderful trip, Mike, and thank you so much for your call. Here's an email from Wayne in Krakow, Wisconsin. Having traveled 47 states as part of my previous career, I learned firsthand that there are countless wonderments all over our country. As grandparents, my wife and I try to share this with our grandchildren. Their parents take them to the water parks and theme parks, and we try to do one trip per year to other places. Last year, a drive to Yellowstone, Mount Rushmore, the Badlands. A few years prior, a driving loop to Hershey, Pennsylvania and surrounding attractions, and then north to Corning Glassworks and Niagara Falls in New York, home through northern Pennsylvania, Ohio. This year, a trip to the Florabama region of the Gulf Coast.
Oh, interesting. We went on a trip to Williamsburg, in which we spent all of our time at the historical parks, and finally said, oh, the last day, let's go to the theme parks. And my kids were actually bored by them because they thought the other stuff was so much more interesting.
Oh, did they? Oh.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. They're not roller coaster kids, so they said, why don't we stand in line for an hour to go on a scary roller coaster? We just don't get that.
I'm with them. I agree. Terry in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi, good morning. Your guest book sounds like a delightful publication that I'm sure will be very, very useful to a lot of families. One of the drawbacks I can see, though, and I have four children and nine grandchildren, one of the drawbacks is that many of the 500 places I'm sure that are listed in the book that would be wonderful places to visit all require money.
Mm-hmm.
And with your guest talents and some of the common denominators that she's discovered in terms of what children like when they travel, if she'd someday be willing to put an outline together that could be used by creative writers locally, to put a publication like that together that covers a 100 to 150 mile radius of your home, where people could explore on one-day trips or two-day trips, where it doesn't require them breaking the bank, and they don't need a lot of money to travel places. You know, if you're in Milwaukee, for example, where we're at, visiting a dairy farm, or locating a DNR fishery, the local fire department, for teenagers that maybe sometimes think about getting involved with the wrong association, the local jail or the county morgue. And although it sounds gruesome, these are all eye-openers for young people. Our local museum has behind-the-scenes once a year where you get to talk to the people that collect all of these artifacts around the world. Traveling up to Door County in the summer to see Shakespeare out in the woods with Door Shakespeare. The list goes on and on. And if we had local people that could also write these types of publications for individuals that have a limited budget that could only travel on one or two-day trips, I could see the usefulness in that as well.
Yeah, and there are people who have done just that. The amazing thing about your book is that you include lots of locations to go in certain states. I mean, your Chicago and even Wisconsin, it's a very thorough book. But he makes a point. A lot of families don't have the resources to travel. It's expensive to travel.
Or the time, you know, the time. You know, you're often traveling during your vacation time. And I'm a Midwesterner. I grew up in Indianapolis, so I was actually very adamant that this book had to cover the country as much as possible. And sometimes, you know, the most wonderful thing that you find is, you know, in a state park an hour's drive from where you are. So I'm very, very conscious of that being, and I'm so glad you called on this, because I really do believe that it's not just about, you know, the one big family vacation where you go somewhere far away, but you know, you should be exploring where you are.
Mm-hmm. All the time. Absolutely. Thanks, Terry, for the call. I'm not sure about going to the morgue. My mother did that to me when I was about 11, and I had nightmares for a long, long time. She thought it was something that I should see. No, Mom, I don't want to see this.
I've actually read that Alfred Hitchcock's father did that, and that was what sort of developed his
really?
his morbid turn of mind.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, that's interesting. He turned it into a living, and I don't know what I turned it into. I turned it into nightmares. Pat in Green Bay, hi.
Hello.
Hi, Pat.
Like the previous caller, you know, sticking closer to home, I've traveled. I've lived in Hawaii and Alaska and out east and down south. Born and raised in Wisconsin, I bought my wife Wisconsin Scenic Calendar for Christmas one year. And every month we went to that spot and found it and discovered parts of Wisconsin that, having been born and raised here, places I'd never seen.
That's a good idea. Do you have a calendar? That would be a nice thing to do with your book, too. You could fill lots of calendars, but to have a calendar of some of these places, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. I'd love that.
Yeah.
And they are seasonal, too, so that there's certain things, certain times a year when you want to do one kind of trip, and another time of year you want to do something different.
Right. Thank you, Pat, very much for your call. Here's another email. The trouble with trying to see the world with your children is they grow up so fast. There are only so many years, so much money that you have to try to show them what travel has to offer. And for traveling to Europe more than once or twice in a childhood, the cost is prohibitive. You have to get creative. On another note, my husband and I always lower our expectations for what the children will fasten onto while traveling. We might spend a whole morning in the Metropolitan Museum of Art, but the children might have a window of interest closer to 2 hours. That's fine. At least they had initial exposure.
Yeah, yeah, that is absolutely true. And that's why I included in these some treasure hunts. So that when you go to these museums, you give the kids a checklist of things that you're going to look for. So you see the highlights of one or two of seven different galleries, rather than plunging yourself into a gallery and doing it in depth.
This same person also recommended long weekends, which really are great, aren't they, Holly, to see American cities. We've gone to New Orleans, New York, San Diego, and many more, Julia writes.
Right, and then they don't get exhausted with the traveling.
Mm-hmm. How long can you do a trip? Did you do these with your children while you're still doing them?
Oh, I think 2 weeks was probably the longest that we ever did, and that was London, and then Paris, and then Venice. And so there were a lot of it was big stretches of train travel in between. That was a long trip, and they were pretty young, and I guess sort of to the last. The last listener's point, if you're going to pay for overseas travel, you really ought to try to, make sure that you see a good deal while you're over there. Once we'd gotten them over there and they were on a different, different time zone, we tried to pack it as much as we could without exhausting them.
Right. Thanks, Pat, for your call. Georgia in Saner. Hi.
Hi there. I've really enjoyed this conversation. I just wanted to share a couple of observations. My husband and I have 4 children, and we have tried to actually have a balance between taking them overseas to places like Japan and Australia, but also we're big fans of the car trip. And I think a lot of parents dread the long trip in the car, but what we find, and it hasn't been perfect, but especially as they've gotten older, the anticipation really builds when you're driving to someplace like the Grand Canyon, or you're driving to Acadia in Maine, and it's an opportunity for them to read about the place and really get excited when you arrive. And the gentleman who called in about taking his 2-year-old to New Zealand, one of the biggest surprises for us has been how accommodating airlines have become in recent years to catering toward younger children. We flew to Australia with a 6-year-old, a 4-year-old, and a 2-year-old. And took a huge bag of things to entertain them with, only to find that the airline had a special channel on the seat back viewing station geared with television programs and movies and games for children. They provided them with a game pack. They provided them with special meals. And the biggest problem for us is the children fell asleep. It was such a long flight. They had a full 8 hours of sleep without any effort on our part to get them to go to sleep. They arrived in Sydney, Australia, ready to hit the road in the morning, and my husband and I were exhausted and saw the jet lag was really a problem with the parents, not with the children.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, the airlines don't want children fussing any more than anyone else does, and they've gotten very smart about how to deal with it.
You know, I have to ask, though, and I wish them well on a wonderful trip to New Zealand, is there an age where it's just too young? You simply aren't going to remember, oh, when I was 2.5, we took this great trip to New Zealand, and we saw all the sheep, and you're not going to remember that, are you?
I don't know. My daughter claims to remember every minute of all those early trips. Maybe it's because she saw the pictures later, but she's very strong on thinking that because it was an unusual experience, and it didn't blend together with all the other experiences of her childhood.
Mm. So you don't believe there's an age where it simply might be too young?
No, I actually don't. I think that they... you have a great time, you know, showing them these things. They learn something, they absorb something, whether or not they remember or say to themselves, I remember being on that trip and that's what I saw that time. Mm-hmm. It still also develops those habits of being a good traveler that are so valuable.
Here are comments from Mike in Bruce, Wisconsin. On one vacation when they were tweens or early teens, our three children preferred Mesa Verde over the Grand Canyon, Bryce Canyon, and Zion. And as late teens on a trip to southern Germany and Switzerland, they really enjoyed our time at Rothenburg, the medieval walled town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were actually, our kids really liked Mesa Verde better than the Grand Canyon, which surprised me. And certainly in the East, we don't hear much about it. I thought it was a fantastic place.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that, you know, it doesn't really matter. If they like something better, that's great, as long as they like something.
Right. Thanks, Georgia, for the call. Anne in Madison, hi.
Hi. I don't know whether I can do this anymore, but in the 70s, I was divorced and living on the East Coast, and my ex-husband was living on the West Coast, so I got a train ticket with a little compartment, sleeping compartment that folds down. You could use it as for daytime travel too, to California, and then I got a Greyhound bus ticket for it was $75 for adults and $37.50 for children to come back. So we went, we took the train from Washington, D.C. on one of the last trips of the Southern, I can't remember what it was, but anyway, it was a real, you know, great train, to New Orleans, where my son lost his camera. And then we took another train all the way across the southern part of the United States. It ran out of beer in San Antonio, I remember. I think the air conditioning went off, but it was absolutely the funnest trip. And my son met another little kid about his age, and, you know, they played games and stuff, and I met adults who were fun to talk to. We got to California, we stayed there, and then we used the Greyhound bus ticket, which allowed you to get on and off anywhere you wanted to, just so you were going in roughly the same direction. So for almost, you know, so little money, we took the northern part of the country back, and in parts of that route, there were only my son and me and the bus driver on the bus, and he stopped at his favorite bar in Montana and showed us how to play lotto or whatever they were, Keno, I think. And he saw a friend of his with an ore truck passing, and he stopped the guy and said, can I have a piece of ore for the kid, which he did. And we it was really an adventure for me. It was, it was very educational. And for my son, it was just a big adventure, and it was really cheap.
Oh, it sounds great. Do you know if such a trip would still exist, Holly?
That certainly is much less on the trains now than there used to be. I had a similar trip when I was about 12 that is still one of the most memorable trips of my life, going, you know, from Chicago all the way out to California.
Mm.
And you're right, you take time, you know, and people who travel that way are also really good travelers, and they're eager to meet people and be friendly on the trip, and that's another plus. I think you can still do a certain amount of long distance. I did some I don't know, back around 1990, certainly, that a longer train, but it wasn't quite as comfortable or as luxurious. They're trying to revive this stuff, and I have a friend, an adult friend, who recently did a lot of traveling with a golden passport around the country, but I don't think they it's not like it used to be back then. I think you were just, you were incredibly lucky. That
yes.
sounds like such a special trip.
Doesn't it? What a great trip. Thank you so much, Ann, for your call. Judy and Custer, hi.
Hi, Kathleen. I want to suggest something for people who want to take young children to art museums. Our son and daughter-in-law have always loved to go to art museums, and they started taking their kids when they were about 3 and 4. And one thing that made them very interested is a series of books by an author named James Mayhew. That's M-A-Y-H-E-W. And they're such books as Katie and the Mona Lisa, Katie and the Sunflowers, Katie and the Starry Night.
Oh.
And I remember my 3-year-old granddaughter saying at one time, oh, I love the Impressionists. But when they would take them to the museums, then they had such a person. Well, Katie always goes into the pictures and interacts with the people in the pictures in the books, and so my granddaughter also said that, oh, I just want to go inside there, Daddy. So that was James Mayhew books are just really, really good
suggestion.
Having kids go to art museums.
Wonderful. I didn't know about those, but they sound terrific, even for adults. Judy, huh?
Oh, they're fun. But the other good thing I had is that, well, we're thinking of going with our son and daughter-in-law and the kids who will be 8 and 9 then. We want to go to Munich, but I'm curious about how much you would prepare them with the language when you go to another, to another country. Should we teach them some of the words so that they won't feel so alien?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I think that varies from child to child. I've got 2 children who are really interested in the language, and the other one for whom it's a little confusing. And that's just a processing difference in different kids. But I think it's, first of all, it's always useful to teach them to say, you know, hello, thank you, you know, just those courtesy words, because that sort of makes the people you're dealing with so disarmed and charmed when they see a small child who's taken the time to learn a few words in their language. So I think you have to gear that to the kid and to their interest. If they seem interested when you teach them the first few things, you might teach them a few more words, words that they'll see. You know, don't want to teach them anything that they aren't going to encounter when they're there, you know, things that they're particularly interested in. And maybe give them a couple words every day on your trip that you can say, you know, today we're going to be looking for this word and see if you can find it somewhere. So, again, that treasure hunt aspect that keeps them interested every day.
Yeah, good. Thank you.
Good. Thanks, Judy. Lines are open if you'd like to join our conversation now. Our number is 800-486-8655. Holly Hunter is our guest writer and editor. She edited the guide, Frommer's 500 Places to Take Your Kids Before They Grow Up. Holly Hughes, our guest. She and her family, her 3 children, have traveled literally all over the world. And there are more than 500 places in this book. And it's broken up into a lot of different categories. They've got awesome vistas, exploring the scenery, weird and wonderful, a walk with animals, lost in the mist of time, the ancient world, medieval, war and peace, for budding scientists, a dose of culture, historic homes, and the list goes on. So you can find something that will tickle everybody's fancy in 500 places to take your kids before they grow up. More phone calls in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow during this hour, Daniel Golden, one of our favorite book people, will be in our Milwaukee studios, and we'll be talking about new books for spring reading. We love doing these shows about books, and we love to have Daniel with us. So that's tomorrow at 10 o'clock. This hour, we talk about 500 places to take your kids before they grow up. Holly Hughes, editor of the new Frommer's Guide, second edition, is our guest. Megan in Wausau is next. Hi, Megan.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I am absolutely passionate about traveling with my kids. My husband and I have a bucket list, sort of, that we have determined that before our kids turn 18, what we'll do. determined it after our oldest was 18, but we take either the train or whatever. This about 2 years ago, we did the train from Milwaukee up through Minneapolis over to Glacier, and we did the national parks there.
Nice.
And then went through and did several in California, and we did, you know, Yosemite, and we've done the Grand Canyon, we've done Yellowstone, and my kids absolutely adore the national parks, so that's always fun for us. This summer in June, we're going to be going to Acadia, so that'll be a good one for us.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how many people will consider doing national parks with their kids, but it's our top destination by far and away.
Mm-hmm. And do you do camping while you're there? Are you just hiking around?
Generally, we don't do the camping. Camping, you have to plan about a year in advance. You know, it's difficult to camp sometimes there because their slots end up, you know, so full.
Yeah.
But, you know, we did the train all the way over to Oregon and then rented a car and went down the California coast and did Redwoods that way. This year, we're going to be traveling up through Canada to get to Acadia, specifically for whale watching. So that'll be fun. So, yeah.
That sounds fantastic. And I think you make a good point, is that when you find something that your kids like, a mode of travel or a type of travel that they like, you know, go with it.
It's
yeah,
wonderful.
Actually,
you all enjoy it.
We purchase our vehicles based on our trips. So, all right. Well, thank you so
thanks,
much for
Megan.
The great topic.
Thanks. Thanks for the call. Here's an email that's come in from Christina. I have 3 children, 3 to 8, and we've been doing a lot of traveling for years. The 2 best tips I have are, 1, leave any child not potty trained and not yet capable of walking long stretches with grandparents. You, the child, and grandma will all be happy. 2, save any historical or museum trips for when the children are competent readers. Take the young readers on outdoor adventures where they can learn about biology and geography. For the record, Christina writes, my 8-year-old's favorite destinations have been London and Rome.
Okay, sounds good.
Would you agree with that about potty training and reading?
No. No, I think actually that during potty training is a difficult time to travel. But I think that a kid with diapers, you know, you can sort of deal with that actually very easily. So you have this sort of nice little window until they're potty trained where, you have to carry a lot of diapers. You have to, you know, always be restocking on them. But you're a little bit more in control. But then, those potty training months, you really need to be someplace where you can always find a bathroom the minute they need it.
Yeah. Megan, thanks. Happy traveling this summer. Jody in Downing, hi.
Hi. My kids now are in their mid-20s, and we were a homeschool family, so my husband and I are both self-employed. We had the opportunity to travel a lot, and we spent 6 weeks in New Zealand. Our youngest son turned 3 there, and there were a lot of great trips. I would say they actually refer more back to them than during the trip. There are a lot of times that they just wish they were at home, they said. But anyway, New Zealand was fabulous because we rented a car and we camped. And every single town has campgrounds right in the town. There's cooking facilities, and it was a great, great way to meet people. But I'd say that one of the biggest advantages, I think, is our kids are really world citizens, which is important now. And it was wonderful. So that's all I have to say.
That was great what you said. Thank you, Jody. Nice to hear from you. Ruth in Milton, hi.
Hi. When our children were younger, we're through with summer duties with our work, we took a series of long trips across the U.S. and Canada with 2 small tents and a stove. Cuts down on your costs and because you cook your own meals. And it was really just the highlight of our whole family's life. It was just so wonderful. We saw so much state parks, national parks. We had a series of old station wagons we traveled in. So now they're grown up. I'm retired on my own, and I still travel that way and enjoy it very much. It's a wonderful way when you're to be able to use your resources wisely and be in the outdoors and also see all those wonderful sights and activities.
So you travel by yourself?
I do now. Uh-huh. I do now. I've been retired for about 10 years, and I decided I had to see what it was like to do trips like that on my own, and I still like to do that.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Have you branched out? Are you going to places that maybe you would have wanted to go, but nobody else in the family did?
Well, it seems like we've been almost everywhere. I still, I like to go out to New England a lot, spend quite a bit and spend more time there than we used to because we would go west so much. So I enjoy that. And also West Texas, the hill country of Texas, is very nice. And there are a lot of women, you know, Kathleen, there are a lot of women that are on their own now. So you do in these parks do find quite a surprising number of people that travel that way.
I think you need to write a guide for just those people, Ruth, don't you?
Well, they probably know more than I do.
Well, just ask them what they know, and then you write it down.
Yeah, and so our children remember all the wonderful things, and some of the things our station wagons would break down a lot, and they do remember that and laugh, you know.
Yeah, I have memories of waiting in some small town in the middle of nowhere while the car was getting fixed. And, you know, and picking up on the anxiety of the parents. You know, saying,
yeah.
Oh my God, we need to get going. And for us, it was fun. You know, I remember things like, you know.
Oh, I know.
The first time I ever saw, like, a little vending machine that just dispensed peanuts, and they were, like, warm. And I mean, I have very strong memories of those things. I have no idea where the town was. But, you know, I think you're right. Your kids become confident travelers if you get out there and do these things. They pick that up more than anything else.
Well, Ruth, your travels sound wonderful. Good for you. Write your guide, and we'll do an interview.
Yeah, nice to hear all the interesting experiences on this program today.
It is nice. Thanks, Ruth, very much for your call. Let's go to Sue in Elk Mound. Hi, Sue.
Hi. I've been enjoying listening to everyone's stories, and my daughters are in their 30s now, but our trips, it didn't even matter where we went because it was such a bonding experience for the four of us just to be together out in some strange area. And the things that we laugh and talk about now are, you know, we all remember when my daughter dropped her camera through the tiniest crack when we were stepping on the ferry to go see the Statue of Liberty, and we all just stood there watching it sink.
Ooh.
And, you know, it's those memories that are just so much fun to talk about now. And
right. We
finally got to the East Coast because living in Wisconsin, seeing the ocean was a big deal. And our one daughter, who was in junior high at the time, was having a little snit about something, and she refused to look at the ocean. And, you know, there's those moments, too. And one time when we came back, I don't even know where we were, but we came back to the airport, and we had not thought about having to have money to pay for our parking, and that was before you could do it with a credit card. And my husband and I looked at each other and we said, we don't have $80 in cash. We're drained. And my daughter, who was about 7 at the time, said, I have $80. And she pulled out her little pink purse and handed us $80.
Aww.
We have no idea where it came from. So all of our trips, we're just, they just made our family bond stronger, and it didn't matter where we went.
Oh, Sue, I love your stories. That's hysterical. She wouldn't look at the ocean because she was kind of upset. Oh, my. I'm sure she eventually did. Those are great. And that's true. You remember those forever,
yeah,
all those stories.
I think that's something that we forget is that you're right, the travel disasters.
Yes.
Are the bonding things.
They are.
We're weird, you know, somebody that you meet. And my kids are still talking about some homeless guy that we saw. He was drunk and he was homeless in a little town in Wales. And he was so funny.
Mm.
Had the broadest accent. And they'll still talk about that and just, you know, just. But it was a reminder that these different places are just like anywhere.
Right.
And it was a real thing. It wasn't a package moment.
Right,
a real thing.
Holly, thank you so much for being with us. We've had great fun and learned a lot.
Loved hearing everyone's stories, too.
Yeah, thanks. Holly Hughes, the book is 500 Places to Take Your Kids Before They Grow Up. I think it's okay even if they're grown up. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour and Katie Mattson for on-air production in Milwaukee.